Welcome to the first United We Stand podcast of the season. My name's Andy Mitten and I'm walking along a street in Yokohama, Japan. The sound of cricket by a riverside in the background. Just about to turn a corner and walk the final 500 metres towards the International Stadium in Yokohama, which holds 80,000 people. And the last time Manchester United here was in 2008 when United were crowned world champions. I'm going to go to the game. I'm going to go to the game in Osaka and the game in Hong Kong, and in a few weeks to the game in Stockholm, and bring you various podcasts along the way. On this podcast, we're fortunate to speak to Rio Ferdinand. I met him at the United Hotel and he speaks to us for 20 minutes. But before we get to Rio, I'm going to go into the stadium, see what's going on, see who's around. There's about 10 fans come over from Manchester and other parts of the United Kingdom. There's a few expats here, but the overwhelming majority of people going into the stadium are obviously Japanese people from the Tokyo area. It's the biggest city in the world, and the north of Japan. Now, they're not all United fans. There's been some pre-season games where the stadium is just full of red, but the team from Yokohama are an established J-League side. They might be 15th in the table, but they were champions on four occasions, the last time in the 90s, and they averaged 23,000, so they're a fairly big club in their own right, and they're probably pleased to be playing Manchester United in this pre-season game. I'm on the Tokyo Underground, the last train back. Manchester United got beat 3-2 in Yokohama by Yokohama. Shinji Kagawa was made man of the match despite only playing 29 minutes. He did absolutely fine in that 29 minutes, but there's no way he was man of the match. And then after the game, I went to meet some of the travelling United fans who've come over from Manchester and other parts of the UK. They were all buzzing, they were singing about coming to Yokohama. It's a long way to Yokohama, where only the good teams go. Goodbye Man City, goodbye Liverpool too. It's a long way to Yokohama. And they're having a great time. They've gone back to Tokyo now. I've gone back to Yokohama. And in the morning, I'm going to catch a bullet train to Kyoto and then go on to Osaka for United's next game. So United lost tonight. It's not really a huge deal because the team they were playing, Yokohama, they're third in the league. They're playing every week. United, obviously, clearly technically better players, but got nowhere near the same levels of fitness. And the average age of the United team was 23. There was quite a bit of inexperience in that. However, Adnan played really well. He's only 18. He played just behind Robin Van Persie. He looked good. Wilfred Zaha beat a man a few times, put a cross in, so you can see that he's a player as well. So the ingredients are there, and the result is not a huge deal. The United team are getting up quite early tomorrow, and they're getting a bullet train to Osaka, which is the same as what I'm doing. I think they're on a slightly later one, but it contrasts sharply with when Manchester United came here in 1989. All the players went out all night. They were arm wrestling with American Marines. They were just going on the beer and having a great time. But the current team, they can barely leave the hotel because they get mobbed. In fact, they have security inside the hotel following them around wherever they go. So it's 1 o'clock in the morning now. I'm on the final train to Yokohama. It's still busy. Yokohama train station has 2 million passengers per day. To give you an idea, Manchester Piccadilly has 54,000, so it's 40 times busier than Manchester Piccadilly. And I stood there this morning and just couldn't quite get to grips with the mass of humanity which was passing by. I could only compare it to going to a United match and standing in St. Matt Busby Way and watching all the people go by. But that's temporary. That happens 30 times a year, and it's only really, really busy for the last hour. And I know that from selling fanzines for years. You stand in Yokohama Station, and it's like that 18 hours a day, almost every day of the year. It's quite incredible to watch it. I'm close to my hotel, it's 1:30 in the morning. A couple of things have stood out in the last hour. I had to change trains, and the first train came to a stop. It was the final stop. And about five or six people, about one or two people in the carriages,
were just fast asleep and stayed on the train. So they've missed their last train home because everybody needed to swap trains. And nobody did anything about it. And then I came out of Yokohama station and walking away from the station, and there's people sleeping rough, but they're not like tramps. They're like businessmen. They've got suits and they're just sleeping out in the open. And there were lots of drunk businessmen on the final trains home. One of them was finding it hilarious by saying Shinji Kagawa, Manchester. And there's a culture in Japan, but with the salarymen, just people who dedicate their lives to working. I've read that their average life expectancy is 62. And I saw evidence of it tonight. I mean, my experience so far in Japan and on previous visits has been really positive, that people are good, they're friendly. It's a good place to visit, it's safe. Tokyo is the biggest city in the world. By a distance, the urban sprawl stretches for about 50 miles. So if you can imagine Manchester and Liverpool joined up as one. So all the area in between, in Warrington, and that was all urban sprawl. And then going far as north as Preston and as far south as Northwich, that gives you the biggest city in the world. And it's densely populated as well. I'm walking under a double dual carriageway here, and underneath me are some railway lines. It's like Blade Runner. It's so futuristic, perfectly clean, but the density, the population is really high. I've not seen a garden since I got here. Everybody lives in towers, and the towers are on top of train stations, which are squeezed in between motorways. It's not the most densely populated city in the world, but it's close to it. We're in central Yokohama. Clearly, if you're in an outlying suburb of Tokyo, it's not like this. I'm with Rio Ferdinand in the team hotel in Yokohama, the second biggest city in Japan, where Manchester United played in 2008. Good memories of that one, Rio?
Yeah, I just sent a tweet out, actually, about that one. Last time we was here, we lifted the World Club Championships. It was a great moment for the club, so good memories.
You've got a testimonial coming up against Sevilla at Old Trafford. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm proud. It's an honour, really, to have been able to have stayed at this club for that many years, and to be given the honour of having a testimonial is an achievement in itself. So I'll celebrate that with friends, family and all the fans, because, I do appreciate their support over the years, and to win things, you need the support and the push of the people around the club who support the club as well. So hopefully it's a good celebration and we can all enjoy it.
Where's the money going to from the testimonial?
I'm just in the process at the moment with the committee, just organising and sorting out where it's going to go. It's mainly going to go to local charities.
In Manchester?
In Manchester, yeah. Just sorting out, dividing it up and stuff like that, and where and who gets what. So it's not as cut and dry and as simple as you may. I don't really want to just give it to one place, because I don't think it's fair like that. I think more people can benefit from getting good handouts.
So you're going to spread it around?
Yep, yeah. As I said, just divvying everything up is going to be... It's obviously, there's a lot of sums to be done and stuff, and it's not something you can just... I take lightly, so I'd rather do it the right way and correct, and 100% all the... No stone unturned.
And anywhere from where you're from, because you always spoke well.
Yeah, there'll be some guy in there as well, but I think this is about Manchester, if I'm honest. This is about the people of Manchester, the people that support the club, and I think it'd be wrong of me to put money, or most of any donations that I sort out, down south, if I'm honest. And me being a proud southerner, it's hard to say that, but I think it's just the honest way to do it.
You're torn between Manchester and London. You said a couple of years ago when I interviewed you how much you love Manchester, but last year you said you'd probably move back to London. Andy Cole said when he moved to Manchester, he told his wife Shirley, "We're going back to London, don't worry." But they've stayed and they're stuck now and they're happier. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I speak to Coley about that and he just smiles, man. He just says, "Yep, I'm staying," type
thing. Is that when he's not one of his "I'm moving to Miami" moods?
Yeah, but it's... No, I mean, it's weird. I mean, everyone's different, and I think my parents and my wife's parents are really family-orientated people and get up as much as they can. I've got younger brothers and sisters as well, and I've missed a lot of their younger life growing up. So that's a big kind of weight on my shoulders in some respects, that I want to just see the latter part of their youth when they grow up and be closer, and my kids to be closer, my little brothers and sisters as well, their uncles and aunties and nan and granddad. So that's a big pull for me, really, to go back to London. And eventually, when I do finish playing for Man United, I eventually do see myself going back to London. But I've got enough ties in Manchester to be coming up once or twice a week, I'm sure.
Ruud van Nistelrooy kept a house in Manchester where he comes on holiday. Don't think there's many people in the world who have a second holiday home in Manchester.
No, he's one of very few, I think. But I didn't even know that, to be honest, yeah. But he obviously has got a liking for the place as well. So, yeah. But I can see why.
But football could take you anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. So depending what happens in terms of my football after, whether I go into coaching or not, it could be a case of going elsewhere and looking at another city maybe. But, I mean, my time in Manchester will always be a big part of my life now. So I'm grateful for that.
And what are you thinking of doing? Because you're probably not going to be playing in 10 years,
Yeah, as I said to you before, I just wanted to be, when I got to 26, 27 year old, I just wanted to make sure, when I understood what made me tick to play the best football that I can play and how I prepare for games, I wanted to just make sure that I put myself in a position when I retire that I've got options, and whether it be coaching, through doing my coaching badges or the stuff with my magazine, online magazine that I've got, my restaurant or the five stuff that I do, I wanted to be able to say I can pick and choose and be happy with what I go with, so I'm comfortable. So we'll have to wait and see, and I'll cross that bridge when it comes.
Take one moment from your Manchester United career where you thought, this is the bollocks, this is just absolutely brilliant, a buzz, and it might not be an obvious one, I don't know.
I'll have to go through a couple for you. You know what, it's just holding the kit the first time,
yeah,
when I signed. I remember the boss saying at the time, to my mum when I signed, my mum and my wife, he said, he don't seem happy. And my mum said to him, because he hasn't put the kit on yet, he doesn't feel absolutely done until he actually puts the kit on, or all the paperwork goes through. Until that, then he won't see much of a reaction from him. And just the feeling, when you go back to being a kid, it takes you back to being a kid where you're feeling the kit, smelling it, rubbing the socks, the weight of them, the shorts.
Where was you doing this? At home?
In the change room. No, in the change room. I just asked the kit man, can he give me a kit just to have a little look? I've never felt one of my United kit before. And then that was a big moment. Winning the league my first year. I didn't want to come here and in my first year not win anything. And we lost the League Cup final to Liverpool, which was hard to take. But winning the league that first year, you kind of think, yes, I've got my hands on it. And then it spurs you on again. And then 2008, the actual winning in Moscow was just, because if we had lost to an English team and Chelsea, you just don't live that down. So, beautiful moment.
And after that game, you went straight to bed?
No, that's one of probably the most drunkest I've ever been in my life.
What were you drinking?
Do you know what? It was weird, right? Because the game finished, the time was
2 o'clock
really mad.
In the morning.
So, like, we got back to the hotel. Normally, after a game, if you're going to go out anywhere, you just make sure you load up on some food first.
What sort of food?
So, we got there just like that.
Carbs.
You know, carbs type stuff. So we went back to the hotel. There was they laid a buffet on. It was a fry up, like eggs and bacon and sausages.
3 a.m.
At 3 a.m. Like, no one wants to eat that. So we just got straight on it drinking.
What?
Beer. So then a couple of fans got in and they were going, singing songs there, and they was like, oh, you can't drink, Rio, blah blah. So I ended up stupidly, I just downed a pint, and they went to the geezer. Right, let's go one for one.
So they're challenging you,
yeah,
saying you can't hold your beer.
Yeah, so then I must have got to about three or four, and one of the fellas said, no, I'm out. And another fella, I got to about five, he said no. And then I just carried on going. This is in about an hour and a half, just down in pints. And I got to about eight, finished, carried on the night. And I remember my dad saying to me, because a couple of my best mates were there from when I was a kid, my missus had gone to bed, and then my dad said, listen, we've got to get up. The flight leaves and that. The coach leaves the hotel in about half an hour. I've got no time to sleep. It was about 8 o'clock in the morning. So I went, no, I tell the boss I'm flying on my own. I can't. I hit a brick wall straight away. So do you just ring the boss and tell him I'm coming home tomorrow? I can't go to bed. Then I remember him putting me in the shower.
Your dad?
Yeah, well, he put me in the bathroom, turned the shower on, said, just get in the shower. And he came in. And he went, Rio, what are you doing? And I stood under the shower with my boxers, my socks, I think I had my shirt on as well, just in the sand, saying, "Dad, you can't, I can't leave this hotel. I'm gone. I'm gone." Well, that was the most wasted I've ever been, and I think I think the lads say it's one of the funniest they've seen me on the coach and that, singing songs on the way to the airport.
What were you singing?
Just Man United songs. I don't know. Off my head.
Dwight York in Barca 99 was probably the tale I've been told by the other lads was the worst, or Roy Keane. York involved women he'd met that night, thanks to Jordy Cruyff. Roy wanted to go where the postman drank at 7 in the morning, and was saying to people, "Where did he drink?"
No, it was just mad.
So that was your night. That was your.
Yeah, I mean, if you ask the lads, I think I was with Wazza a lot in the next morning. If you ask Wazza, all the lads, Shazy, all of them would say, I was in an absolute state.
You were worse than all of them.
Yeah, I was a disgrace.
What's your favourite United song?
Probably the United, that one probably. I won't go into the others. There's a few that I shouldn't say. So.
But you enjoy them.
Yeah.
I had told readers that you were speaking to us on this podcast, and we just got a couple of little questions, funny ones. Ibiza, Miami, or Vegas?
Ibiza, by a country mile.
Favorite Ibiza club?
The Amnesia.
London or Manchester? Sorry.
I'll have to say London.
Is Daft Punk the best album of the year so far? Brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great album.
Starts talking about
that's a great album, but I'd have to put Thingy. Miguel's album is the best album for me. Not the best, it's the most I've listened to out of all of them. But Daft Punk is, I'd say it's up there.
Who's in charge of tunes in the dressing room?
Evra.
Wise choice?
Safe choice.
What does he put on? Like French music, Joe Lattaxi and all that?
No, he puts on a bit of everything, a little bit of... It's just current music, really. Nothing that out of the ordinary that you think, where's that come from?
We Are the People or Walking on a Dream by Empire of the Sun? Which one of those, Tim?
We Are the People.
I've looked at your playlist here, that's why I've asked that.
Oh, yeah.
Sweet Disposition or Love Lost?
Sweet Disposition.
They were brilliant three or four years ago. I saw them in concert and they've not really kicked on.
Don't know what the fuck's happened.
That album's brilliant.
Yeah, I know, but it happens with some groups, doesn't it? Some people, they just come out and then all of a sudden it's like they're just searching for that same mix and blend of music they just never find.
I saw him in front of 300
Craig David's exactly
people.
The same. Yeah. Craig David, but he's one of the great debut album, and then I don't know what happened.
Sweet Disposition's like probably the best song of that year.
Oh.
And the good live as well. Yeah,
people don't. They're not even on the radar anymore. People don't even speak about them.
I saw him in front of 300 people in Barcelona. I thought next year they're going to be 10,000.
Yeah, exactly.
It just didn't happen. Yeah. Jessica Alba or Naomi Campbell?
In what sense?
To go to the library with.
probably Jessica Alba.
Gwyneth Paltrow or Angelina Jolie?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Favourite Manchester bands?
Stone Roses, easy.
What song?
It's obvious, isn't it? Fool's Gold.
Did you see him in?
Yeah, I went. It's fucking unbelievable. What a fucking day that was.
Eton Park?
God, yeah. One of the best concerts I've ever been to in my life. It was unbelievable.
I saw him in Barcelona at the start of the tour, and it was just like a big karaoke. Everyone just singing.
Fucking unbelievable. I'd love to see. The only thing that killed me is I weren't drinking that day because it was just before pre-season.
Yeah.
And I'd had my mad moments at the beginning of that summer, so I couldn't.
In Ibiza?
No, it weren't Ibiza, but it was elsewhere. But just that's the only thing that killed me. But to say that it was still the best concert I've been to, not even drinking, says how good a concert it was.
Do you hate Jamie Oliver for opening an Italian restaurant right across the road from your one?
No, I actually thank him, because he's brought more people down to the area, and it's good for business. I think it's been good for our business, definitely. It's become a little bit of an eating hub.
What's the best and worst thing about Twitter?
The best thing is interacting with the fans and being able to set the record straight on a lot of things, but the worst thing is you just get idiots from Liverpool, Manchester City, most of the time, who've got so much to say, but when you see them ask for your autograph, it does your head in.
Yeah.
Idiots.
Yeah. Is it true, asked one reader, that you're hosting the next Olympics?
It's silly question, isn't it?
How long would it have taken you to draw blood from that Divvy City fan with the daft hat who ran on the pitch in last year's derby? You better be diplomatic as you answer that one.
Yeah.
I think he had regrets.
I think it would have been nice to have restrained him.
Yeah. That's a diplomatic answer. Hmm. Do you put yourself up front on FIFA? Somebody wants to know.
No.
Do you play it?
Yeah.
But you just play centre-half?
Yeah, I just play it centre-half, yeah. I don't actually play with Man United because they're too good on it. Well, my standard's too good, so...
Who do you play with?
I play with, like, I go to championship teams and stuff like that, try and work them up.
Do you?
Yeah.
So you play, like, Brighton and try and get them into the...
Yeah, the Premier League and Champions League and stuff.
If you were a manager, which Manchester United player, if any, would you buy?
If I was a Man United... If I was a manager.
So your manager of...
Oh, okay. And which
manager? Real Madrid.
If I was a manager of another top team,
yeah,
I would buy. Who would I buy? Jesus. I'd buy Danny Welbeck.
Why?
Because I can see in a couple of years that he'll be a top player.
Why?
Because he's got all the credentials, he's got everything, speed, brave, technique, heart, desire, and within 2 years I can see him adding the goals. That's the only thing that's really missing from his game. I think last season was a bit of a... I think it was a bit, not overhyped, but he scored 2 goals, I think, last season, and I think you'll never see that from him again.
Madrid was a buzz. Away.
Yeah, I mean that performance there, as I said, that's the standard that he can get to. He's just got to do that week in, week out, and if he does that week in, week out, then you're talking about one of the top players about.
As a fan, my highlight last season, probably a strange one, this, was arriving in Madrid ahead of that game on the Avi train and just thinking, Man United are playing in the Bernabeu tonight, the team I support, and you can't help how you feel, but I just felt this is just brilliant.
Yeah,
I was excited.
That's probably one of my most enjoyable games last season for me, over there at their place, because everyone really didn't expect us to get a result. Everyone thought we'd get beat, and
it's a cracking game. Because of Ronaldo, it's a great game of football.
But yeah, I mean we should have finished a tie over there. If I'm honest, we should have finished it. They had a couple of shots from far and stuff, and David made a couple of saves. But I mean, we had real chances to really kill that game off over there. Robin has one late on as well.
Then
Ramos saves one off the line. I mean, if we score another, I reckon if we just score one more goal there, we win the tie. But yeah, that was one of my. I mean, I'll just buzz off playing in stadiums of history.
Not
the best stadium, but I just think it's the history of the stadium. I just love that type of stuff. I'm quite funny like that about things. That's why I love Old Trafford. I like Anfield.
Yeah.
That's why I like playing at the Bernabeu, New Camp, and stadiums like that.
I interviewed Luis Enrique recently, and he said when he finished playing, this is in the next 4-4-2, he paid for himself. He wanted to listen to You'll Never Walk Alone at the ground he played at. He's not a Liverpool fan. He just went on the cop, put his hat up, got recognised by one person who was pissed, but just moved along, and he went to Celtic Park, and he said, I love the culture.
That's
and
not
the
Celtic
history.
Park. It's one of the loudest stadiums I've ever been to before a game. The roar before the game he played there is the loudest I've ever heard at a stadium. Unbelievable. But then you go to Turkey, them stadiums are mad as well.
Ben Besiktas, Galatasaray.
Yeah.
We went there in 93, none of us got in the game.
Was it?
Yeah, it was just mad. But I love Istanbul, I think it's a great city. And what's the worst stadium you've played in?
The worst stadium? Probably Plough Lane, Mirror Plough Lane.
Yeah.
I've played there in a youth cup game.
Of the River Wandle running behind the goal.
Yeah, shocking.
And the dog track.
It's like that. It's like a big mound.
And all the stories about... We had Terry Gibson on one of these podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
He was brilliant, just telling us the stories about setting fire to Eric Young's tracksuit and he couldn't go home because he had no clothes. Nearly there. How good is Adnan?
Yeah, he's got the tools to be a top player. He just needs to keep working hard and adding pieces to his game. Good work ethic and... He's got the natural ability. He could be a real top player.
Would you rather be an eagle that can't fly or a cheetah that can't run?
Neither. But if I was going to be any of them, I'd probably be a cheetah.
Who's the best player in training now? Scholes has retired.
me, and then not really. Best player in Japan, Shinji Kagawa's up there.
Where are you? Top five.
Effort, yeah.
But Shinji's brilliant, is he?
Yeah, Shinji. His first training session was at Yokohama Stadium, and he was probably the best player. Yeah, probably the best player in training. He had his first day there.
But he came last in the shootout at the end.
Yeah, the shootout. Yeah, but he said he went. Football not a problem, but shooting, I need more time. So he said. So.
This could be a big season for him.
Yeah, I think I'm very, very excited to see how he does, because I think last season he was feeling his way in, didn't know much about the league, and he got an injury at a critical time when he was just starting to get a good bit of rhythm in his football. This season, I think he could be a surprise package.
Two last questions. A load of lads starting you in a pub. It's nailed on, going to go off. You have only one present or past teammate to fight with you. Who would it be?
John Artson.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you hear about his charity game?
John Artson or Paul Kitson?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Artson's charity game, when Dave Besant was in net, and Artson can't play, go up to take a penalty, and Besant took it really seriously. Dived, saved it, pushed it around the post. No. The whole crowd just like... That's out of order.
Yeah.
Final question is one we ask everyone who comes on here. You don't have to answer it. It puddles some people. Would you rather be bummed by a horse and nobody knew, or not bummed by a horse but everyone thought you had been?
Not.
Not. So you take it. Everyone thought.
Yeah, I couldn't give a... There's no recovery after that.
Thank you for your time.
Cheers, mate. Nice one.
I'm now on the Shinkansen, the bullet train, from Shin Yokohama, and it's travelling south towards Kyoto, which comes highly recommended for any tourist going to Japan. Manchester United's team are also on the bullet train. They're not on this one, they're on in an hour's time. And I walk through the station, and there's a United concession selling official merchandise, and there's actually a queue outside waiting for it to happen. And a TV screen as well showing goals from past European games. And I don't tend to look back a lot, but I was just struck by the 4-0 game against Milan in 2010. A few things stood out for me. Nani setting up Rooney with an absolutely wonderful pass. Rooney just realising how good he actually is. Thiago Silva playing for Milan. He's wanted by Barcelona, but he gave the ball away, which led to that goal. And Darren Fletcher scoring with a header. So four names there stood out to me, all relevant and topical for completely different reasons. Some were seen, some were not. So I'm on the train now. I'm with John. John's one of the few travelling United fans over here. He's from Moss Side originally. He now lives in Bahrain. Welcome to the United We Stand podcast, John. Hey,
thanks, Andy.
You're a United We Stand subscriber in Bahrain.
Yep, getting a magazine every month. Delayed, of course, because it's in Bahrain, but it arrives eventually.
So why is it delayed? Did it get censored?
They try to censor it. I mean, they open it and check there's no pornograph or bacon in there.
I dread to think what a censor in Bahrain makes of some of our writers, because I can't understand some of them.
Well, let me tell you, when I lived there before, you might remember the TV series Little House on the Prairie. Well, that used to last 30 minutes in England. And when you saw it in Saudi Arabia and Bahrain, you were lucky if you got 20 minutes. And you'd think, what on earth have they found to censor 10 minutes out of that?
So you're based in Bahrain, but you went over to Sydney for the friendly there.
Well, I started off in Bangkok, and of course things didn't go very well on the pitch there. I think United looked as though they were well jet-lagged, and of course it was very humid. But then, we went over to Sydney and had a great time. Sydney's a beautiful city. And the team was staying in the Park Hyatt, and I was just round the corner, so I managed to bump into quite a few of them, including the security guys. And Paddy Crevend, of course, is his usual self, although he wasn't feeling too well for a couple of days. But I think he went to the doctor, and he's back on the red vino now.
Paddy's back to form, I'm glad to say, because I saw him in Yokohama, and he was telling me stories about how a drunk came into his pub once and demanded a certain type of whiskey. And Paddy said, "You won't tell the difference, you're drunk. How are you going to know the difference between a certain type?" And the guy said, "I know my whiskies." So Paddy said, "All right," and blindfolded him, and he poured five drinks into five different glasses: whiskey, vodka, water, and another spirit.
and he reckoned the guy was that drunk that he thought the water was the best whisky. So Sydney, the Australian dollar's really strong, isn't it? How much were ticket prices then?
Yeah, it's really annoying. When I was last in Sydney, it was 55 cents US cents to the dollar, and now it's about 91. So my ticket was actually $99, which in real money is about 65, 70 quid.
So 70 quid to watch a pre-season friendly.
That's right. And then $20 for the programme, which was the same programme as they issued in Bangkok, except they put a different cover on it. And $20 is, what, 14, 15 quid? Four times as much as we pay at OT.
I saw that programme, and they're just switching the cover around. And then you've come to Japan. Normally you'd meet up, you were friends with Rennie Mühlenstein, weren't you?
Yeah, very much so. And in fact, I was talking with Albert, the kit man, only yesterday, and he tells me that Rennie's now the manager. He reckons that Gus Hiddink's already gone.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, okay. Well, I'd no doubt in Albert's word, but that was a bit of a surprise. We were having a chat about whether Mariaka, his wife, will go, and Albert seemed to think she'd stay in Wimslow. So.
Yeah, that's true as well. The family stayed in Manchester, and Rennie's going to work in Moscow, even though the team are based about a 2-hour flight from Moscow. But he was good for United, wasn't he?
Absolutely, yes. I was very sorry when he left. I know Moyes is now saying he tried to keep him, but Rennie told me that basically he offered him his old job back, working with the kids.
That's true. So what you've got now is a situation where some people are saying he didn't sack him, he was offered a job. Well, he was offered an inferior job. So would you take an inferior job?
No, that's right. The way he explained it to me, I had every sympathy. You know, as he said, after sitting on the bench next to Fergie and Mickey Phelan for so long, he couldn't just go back effectively 10 years. I know he was very sad about it because, his son's in the academy at United, and everything seemed to be set up for him. But there you go.
It's football. I mean, people move around, they can't really control where they're going, but people don't often see the human side of it. So you've got Rennie settled with his family in Manchester, living a Mancunian life, and suddenly, thanks but no thanks, you're absolutely great, but we don't really want you anymore on the same terms as what you're on. And everyone in football will know a similar story and probably experienced it themselves two or three times.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Andy. I mean, I couldn't get over myself. Like, there he is one day in front of the town hall with the Premiership trophy, and within 7 days he's out of a job. I mean, that must be a terrible feeling. But, you know, Rennie's a self-confident sort of guy, and he's slipped right into a great job, and I'm sure he'll do very well there, and it's United's loss. But, you know, strategically, I think Moyes made a couple of mistakes there. He's got rid of a lot of winners at Old Trafford and brought in a lot of nearly men from Everton. Now, you can't blame him for wanting his own team, but if I'd have been him, I'd have said, look, I'll bring my own people across to learn from Rennie and Mickey Phelan and people like that. So, in my book, Moyes has made a critical strategic mistake already.
If you speak to Eric Steele and Mike Phelan, they would echo similar sentiments to... Rejection's not nice in any walk of life, in any job, in any relationship. And these people were integral to United's success. I think David Moyes will be judged on trophies. If United, after six matches, are 15th in the table, people will be going mad, especially because United fans have been spoilt rotten by success. There's absolutely no reality with a lot of United fans, because all they've known is continued success. They've never known the team finish outside the top three. And I saw last season, I remember United drew at Swansea in December, and United had the audacity to drop some points in a football match. And there were loads of people going absolutely mad. And I thought, this isn't the real world. This, every team loses matches. The best United sides ever have lost matches. Of course, it's not everybody, but if United were to finish eighth, there'd be a lot of slapped arses about, and I don't think we will. Yeah, who do you think will win the league?
Well, I agree with you, but I'm old enough to remember the old Farrell days and Dave Sexton and even the Doc. And yeah, they played great football, but we didn't win every game. Now, there's a lot of kids around, but maybe not so many kids, but 25-year-olds, 26-year-olds, who don't know United as they used to be.
So you remember United going down, being
Absolutely,
relegated?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I was in the Stretford End that day, and I cried my heart out when Dennis Backheel that. Now, people reckon, you know, they always say that was the goal that put us down. It really wasn't. It was Stoke the Wednesday before. We threw it away there. And if we'd have won that game, or even drawn that game, we'd have been safe.
In all your time watching United, what would be your high and low points?
That was definitely the low point. And there's so many high points. You've got me there, Andy. Let's start with the 29th of May, 1968.
Were you at Wembley?
I was, 14 years old.
How did you get there from Manchester?
By bus, special coach. I had a couple of mates who looked after me. Oh, they told my dad they'd look after me.
And did you think United would win against Benfica? Eusebio's Benfica in 68.
Well, I went to Bernard Grammar, and that was a red school. And of course, Roger Byrne played there. Went to school there. So, yeah, we were all reds and we were all optimistic. But when Eusebio broke free and Stepney did his business, you just had the feeling that our name was on the cup that night.
You said that you went to the same school as Roger Byrne, the captain of the Busby Babes. Was there any mark of Roger's presence at the school when you were going through there? Were you aware of his importance? Were there any plaques or anything like that dedicated to him?
Yeah, I think to this day, Andy, the top goal scorer in the school wins the Roger Byrne Trophy. It was something I never managed to do. But yes, that was the sort of recognition that Roger had been at the school.
We're now on the train south. I'm going to Kyoto, you're going to Osaka, then I'll go on to Osaka, and then on to Hong Kong for the final game of this leg of the tour. When will you next see United after this? Because you'll go back to Bahrain.
Yeah, it's a good question. Bahrain now has an official Man United supporters club. Meets down at the Sherlock Holmes and the Gulf Hotel. So we'll see the games on TV there, but I've really no idea when I'll next get back to Old Trafford.
And how many people are in the supporters club? And is it expats or is it locals? And is it people from both sides of the divide in Bahrain? Because there's obviously been political problems there.
Yep, the short answer is yes to all those questions, Andy. We had to have 50 members to get official recognition from Old Trafford, so we're up around 51, 52 now. There's quite a few expats and a lot of Bahrainis in there, and you mentioned the divide. I mean, that's not a question we ever ask. You know, we're United fans. You know, as far as I'm concerned, there could be Sunni, Shia, Roman Catholic, Jewish.
So it's like Belfast then. I remember going to Belfast a few years ago and going down the falls, going up the Shankill, seeing Celtic shirts down one and Rangers shirts on another and United shirts on both.
Yes, it's very similar. Unfortunately, there's other similarities with Belfast as well. You know, the young kids now who've been causing all this trouble, they've got into the habit of going out on the streets at night rather than going to a youth club. So, in my opinion, the solution in Bahrain is a generation away. Very, very similar to Belfast.
We're being asked for our tickets here. On the Shinkansen. Thanks for joining us on the United We Stand podcast, John.
No, it's been a pleasure, Andy. Hope to see you in Hong Kong as well.
Well, Hong Kong will feature in the next podcast. I'm finishing this one from Kyoto before heading to Osaka. The last time Manchester United played in this area was in nearby Kobe in 1989 against Everton, when a crowd of just 8,000 watched. And I know a few of the fans who went out to that tour and they're having a go at Ferguson because he'd sold fan favourites Norman Whiteside and Paul McGrath, and Alex Ferguson was defending his decision to them, telling them that while it was difficult, he believed it was the right thing to do. And I think Ferguson, he did it his way, and he had huge success doing it his way. Over 50,000 are expected at the game in Osaka, so I'm going to go to there, and then after that I'm going to fly 4 hours via Shanghai to Hong Kong for the final game of this leg of the tour. Going to meet some characters and people along the way and speak to people ahead of the podcast next week. I'm also starting getting emails from United We Stand writers asking when the deadline is for the first issue of the season. That will be out against Chelsea at Old Trafford, so there'll be some nice pictures and some nice articles from this tour, plus a few interviews. We've got some decent interviews lined up, so that will be out for the first game of the season, as per usual. Thanks for listening to this one, and thanks to John from Bahrain, and also to Rio Ferdinand for giving us their time. Until next week, goodbye.